back to the Hollow Sky Podcast. We are your hosts. I'm Steven.
And Kyle.
And it's Monday, Hollow Cult. You know what that means. You've chosen us to hang out with you to kickstart this work week. Hopefully it doesn't suck. Hopefully you've had a good weekend. And hopefully it continues on into the week. But we appreciate you all choosing us to kick it, probably on your drive to work, your drive from work, during your workout, a lot of work stuff. It is what it is. Let me think here. This week, I've got you a ghost story. So get excited. Get fucking pumped.
Hopefully it's Slimer.
Yeah, it is. If you're new here and you don't want to listen to us talk, or if you're old here and you don't want to listen to us talk, just fast forward like 5 minutes. We'll get through all the business and then you can just get to what you want to get to. That being said, check us out at all our social medias, Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, TikTok, Discord, Reddit. Search up the Hollow Sky Podcast. We'll be there. Come and join the community. Join the cult. You know the drill. It's a cool cult. If you want a different experience, you can hop on over to YouTube and subscribe over there, and you can watch us in real time say these very words to you. It's pretty cool. See, look, thumbs up for you all who came over here to the YouTube. If you have a paranormal experience you'd like for us to share on a future episode of our listener experience shows, Kyle has the details that you're going to want.
I do. It's in the show note, as always, but it's going to be hollowskypodcast@gmail.com. Write your story out, shoot it over there. Any concerns, thoughts, ideas, whatever you got, send it there. That's where it will 100% be seen. Social medias kind of get bogged down and overran rather quickly. Also, if you've caught up on all of Hollow Sky, go check out Uncomfortable Podcast. They got some good jams for you. And it'll help continue on with the oddities in your life.
Yes. When you need more weirdness, go check out homie Eric. He'll give it right to you. If you'd like to support the show, plenty of ways you can do it. You can hop on over to the Patreon if you need some extra stuff. For $7 a month, you get extra unreleased episodes that are just privy to the Patreon community. You get these very shows released early, ad-free. You get casket breath jams over there. You get early access to merch drops, sometimes merch coupons, all kinds of stuff over there. Speaking of merch, hollowskypodcast.com. Go over there, find some of the cool things like t-shirts, hats, beanies, stickers to rep the Hollow Cult. And it's cool. We're going through some the back stock and whatnot, getting primed up to drop some new merch this coming season. So just kind of burning through that. You can also share the show word of mouth to anyone who listens to podcasts, anybody who likes paranormal stuff, mysteries, just general weirdness, throw our name in the hat. Also, if you've got other shows you love and you think it'd be cool for us to do a collab, throw our name out there, shoot that to them, and we'll see what happens. You can also go to wherever you listen to podcasts, your podcatcher, if you will, and leave us a 5-star rating and review. If I find it, I'll gladly shout you out. Oh, also on Spotify, you can't leave reviews, but you can leave ratings and comments. So do that as well. That helps us kind of push through that specific platform, which we're not really that good at on Spotify. We're trying our best. But anyway, yeah, do that. So this week's 5-star rating and review comes to us from our friend, Astropheles. I can't actually read the title because Apple's terrible and will only let me read, I don't know what 10, 5 stars. Astropheles says, Steve and Kyle are like the Gen X brothers I never had. Their banter never fails to amuse, and they find the coolest, weirdest stuff to dig into. 10 of 10, do recommend. Well, Astropheles, you're like the, I don't know what generation you're from, but the brother we never had either.
It's true.
So thank you for the kind words and the 5 stars. And we're glad you're here.
We are. The expansion of the Hollow Cult is the idea that we want to send out into the universe.
I'm giving you a metal sign. So, yeah. Thanks for the kindness. and the words. We appreciate you all. That being said, we're going to dive into a ghost story. I was struggling trying to find something to write about this weekend. I started like 50 episodes like I normally do, and then my ADHD kicks in and I get distracted and I can't focus. So finally I came across this. I run into some pretty cool ghost stories here and there, but this one's way, way different, right? So this week's episode dives into a subject that I struggle with a lot, the idea of ghosts. If any of us have, or any of you have dabbled in the world of the paranormal, you've clearly seen some of the following scenarios I'm getting ready to talk about. Like a group of people sitting around using a Ouija board to communicate with the spirit of someone that's long dead or attempt to make contact with a lost loved one. Classic ghost, like, scenario there.
Yeah, that's like day one shit.
Yeah. Or anytime you turn on your TV to the Travel Channel or History Channel, you get paranormal investigators using ghost boxes and REM pods and other paranormal electronic devices to try and prove the existence of said ghosts. Or there's a group of people conducting a seance around a table where they're trying to communicate with the ghost by moving or tapping on the table. Even further than that, you get stories of haunted houses, people living in old homes, seeing apparitions, and just essentially people of the past in spectral form. This goes on to spread into poltergeist activity as well, like in the last episode of the Incubus series, where things are being moved, keys being moved, the lotion bottles being moved. This is often attributed to ghosts as well. Very much what we think of when we hear the phrase ghosts kind of goes into the realm of like energy or like a spectral remnant of a person that existed in physical form but has died. It isn't here anymore. That's a lot of what we think of when we hear the term ghost, right?
Yeah.
Like that's a go-to. But it made me think of that Acacia Strain song, Names, from It Comes in Waves, because it's got a very specific line in there. And it's also funny. I was thinking this when we were recording the last episode, where you were talking about tests and how it comes in waves. And I literally got it wrote down here. But if you haven't checked out the Acacia Strain and you like heavy music, do it, because they're good, especially that album. But he has a line where he says, "The ghosts that haunt this earth are different than you think," which in its own context really made me like question ghosts as a whole. So on one hand, you have those terms that we're very familiar with, right? Like it's the remnants of a dead person. It's the energy of someone that had been here, but it's not. But it also leads into a very different realm of things that I've come across that are essentially ghosts, but not ghosts of the dead, right? So I found an account of a phantom jogger seen jogging the same trail consistently, wearing the same red suit every day. But it's not a spirit of a dead runner. As a matter of fact, the runner is well alive. He just moved to a different city, hundreds of miles away, but his energy is still trapped in this space where people can see him running, which essentially is kind of a ghost. But also, is it not a ghost? Is it just the energy of something that he loved to do every day? Is it a time slip? Is it just like a perpetual repeat of something that he enjoyed so much?
My brain wants to latch on to this, but I'm still working it out.
It's weird.
It is weird. It just like, I think it's hard for my brain to latch onto it because it splinters off into so many different facets.
And essentially you don't have an answer. You don't know why it's like this, you know?
Yeah. And that's what I mean. Like it splinters off in so many different directions. Like that means that everything that we do puts off energy, and somehow the energy is captured, whether it be in the environment or the materials in the environment, or in our plane of existence. Something captures our energy, and it seems that different things that we do put off different amounts of energy. Because if everything put off the same amount of energy, then in theory, everywhere would have ghosts all the time.
Yes.
Right? But obviously, most likely, he really enjoyed running, which maybe put off more energy because he was doing something that he enjoyed so much.
And it was most likely a constant. That was something that was such a part of his routine that he did it every day. He probably ran the same trail every day as part of his routine.
Yeah.
And it also kind of like plays into a residual haunting. Like residual energy is just in theory, a residual haunting is something that a person that's dead now did so often that it's just on repeat. Does a person have to be dead for that energy to do that?
But even that concept is bizarre when you start to dissect it.
Yeah.
Because you think about the way you move through this house, right? Like, how many times have you walked from the living room to the kitchen? I mean, countless times, right?
Yeah.
But you don't. And whereas you do that every day, you don't do it in the same patterns every single day. Not to mention that path from the kitchen or the living room to the kitchen is also intersected by the kitchen to the bathroom or the kitchen to the utility room. Like, you're intersecting points of energy, so to speak. But what makes this one so significant? Like with the runner, he's not the only person that runs on that trail. Arguably, probably not the only person that runs on that trail every day. Because I'm sure there's more than one person. And even if there's not, you know that there are people that are at least doing it twice a week. So what makes it so much more significant for him than not anybody else?
It kind of gave me a weird vibe when you were talking about that, talking about like the residual energy of me walking through the house. Because it made me think of the shadow that I see walking the same path. What if that's just my residual energy from doing that?
Could be.
Or my future residual energy.
It could be.
Yeah,
because time's, you know, time's
soup.
I don't know. And it confuses my brain a lot because, like I just pointed out, that there has to be some type of unknown factor to create energy. Because let's just pretend I don't know exactly the path, but we'll just say it goes from that spare bedroom to your bedroom. That's the path this shadow person walks. What makes that path so significant versus
every
you
other
to
place?
The kitchen, you to the bathroom? You know what I mean? Like, what makes it so significant?
It's like, these don't even necessarily tie into the actual crux of the episode, but I wanted to put these out there to, like, you know, conjure thoughts of like kind of take you out of the realm that ghosts are dead people, right? Which is exactly what we're doing. And I don't know. I don't know what makes these things stand out more than anything else. Like, and why aren't we seeing spectral, like, vehicles drive? Like, I drive the same fucking 48 miles to work every goddamn day.
You know, that's a good fucking point, too, because arguably more people do that extreme consistency
also,
over running in a park.
Not enjoyable.
It's definitely not, but that also could be attributed to pain, and we know
you're right.
Pain it definitely puts off energy and will create hauntings. And I think, in a nutshell, the way I'm vibing right now, I know it's early in the show, but I feel like ghosts is one of them, like, blanket categories.
Yeah.
And then there should be subcategories of ghosts. Or maybe it's misidentification, you know what I'm saying, where it's just, it is what it is, you know, because a lot of people would argue demons are aliens are demons. What if we're both seeing the same thing? It's just one's calling it one, the other's calling it this, and it's actually the same. You know, there's so many different possibilities.
It is
in that.
Interesting, bro.
And not to mention the entire field in itself is still unexplained for the most part. So people are kind of just taking shots in the fucking dark here.
Yeah, because, like, we essentially don't know what happens after we die.
And like you said, the biggest trope is like seeing a semi-transparent thing, spectral image moving, and everybody says the same thing. That's a ghost. I just saw a fucking ghost.
Yep. I got a couple more examples that make you question, and I got a couple examples at the end after the crux of the episode, which it really got my brain going, kind of like how Kyle's is going right
now.
Yeah,
it's just hammering.
I was spinning off on that. Like, we also have the Doddleston time messages, which we covered way back in episode 108. I think it's called Ghosts in the Machine. Go check it out if you haven't listened to it yet. Essentially, a man moves into an old house, and he has very textbook ghost hauntings. You know, like, he sees weird footprints in the dust in his house, and then, like, something takes coal out of the fireplace and starts writing weird images on the wall. But it quickly spirals after he gets a computer, and whatever this presence is communicating to him through the computer. He thinks it's a ghost, but the entity or energy or whatever that's communicating on the other end of this thinks he's communicating with someone from the future. So which timeline is right?
Right.
Who's out of place there? Which leads into this other more recent encounter that I picked up off of TikTok. There is a creator over there called Kalani. He ghost hunts. Go check him out. He's awesome. In 2023, he went on a tour where each month he stayed in a different haunted location and tried to make contact with essentially ghosts, right? One time he was using a Ouija board, and as he was doing this, he began communicating with an entity who called himself Raymond. Kalani's kind of go-to was he always would ask, what year is it for you? And Raymond responded, 2082. So Kalani's like, that's ahead of me, not behind me. That's weird, right? And Raymond essentially started asking Kalani to do very ghost-like things through the Ouija board, like tap on the walls, you know, for yes, or knock three times for yes, which made Kalani feel like Raymond thought that he was the ghost, which kind of, you know, having those roles reversed with the ghost hunter is very weird. So Kalani's kind of trying to think ahead, you know, and he asks Raymond what his grandfather's name is. He's thinking, you know, Raymond's 50 years in the future. His grandfather's probably alive in my present day. Let me see if I can look him up. So Raymond gives him the grandfather's name. Kalani goes onto Facebook and finds a person matching this name from the same city that Raymond told him he was from. So as Kalani's like vetting and digging into this, essentially the grandfather of the Raymond that he was talking to, he sees that this grandfather of Raymond is deep into like astral projection and interdimensional travel, like Facebook pages. And Kalani's kind of scrolling through his feed. The last message this guy posted was, "This is getting dangerous. I've got to go." And then it just stops. So again, like, it makes you wonder, like, who's the ghost? Right?
What also, like, something that kind of fucked me up just thinking right now is, what if like, he would have looked up that guy, like, the grandfather, and been like, hey, we need to talk, and they have a communication about it. He tells them what's going on, and they're like, oh, it's fascinating, you know, blah, blah, blah. And he's like, so do me a solid. How about, and this is assuming all pieces fall in place, but don't let your grandson be named Raymond.
Oh. Alter the whole timeline.
Because how fucked would it be if he went back to try to talk to Raymond and
His name's Bob
or something.
That'd be fucked.
That would fuck me up. I would either be like, this, either we just changed the future, or this old dude is fucking with me somehow. Because he's literally about, you know, one of a few people that would only know that I requested this.
Yeah. Dude, it's It's so weird. Like, there's so many different connotations of what could be considered ghosts. Like, is it a symptom of how we consider time? Is it, you know, like something more than that? Which, anyway, we're going to kind of get into what the episode is about, but I just wanted to kind of get everybody's brains stirring there. So in these specific regards, these ghosts are kind of like fragments of different timelines, be it present, be it past, be it future, whatever it is. They have nothing to do essentially with life or death, which is what we attribute ghosts to. With all that being said, the case we get into today is kind of another different fracture from that thought process. Like, are ghosts essentially energy of past human beings? Are they time fragments that we can't understand? What if ghosts are nothing more than a symptom of our own minds? Are we doing our brains a disservice by trying to place paranormal connotations on these specific occurrences? Could ghosts just essentially be our own brains manifesting these things? Which brings us to the Philip experiment. And to get into the Philip experiment, in the early 70s, some paranormal researchers kind of got together and were thinking about what ghosts are and what poltergeist phenomena is. And is it just a manifestation of our own brains, as I just mentioned? This group of researchers set out to prove just that, with some very odd results. So basically, the Toronto Society for Physical Research, the TSPR, set out to see if they could create a ghost. The idea was to assemble a group of people who would make up a completely fictional character, and then through seances, see if they could contact this character and receive messages and other physical phenomena from said created entity, possibly even an apparition. Can you create a ghost? Which that in itself is fucking crazy.
It is crazy. But I still feel like this is a general mislabeling of things.
So the TSPR, under the guidance of a Dr. Owen, assembled a group of 8 people, culled from its own membership, none of who claimed to have any psychic gifts. That was a thing that couldn't be, they couldn't, I guess, have connections to the other worlds, right? The group, which became known as the Owen Group, consisted of Dr. Owen's wife, a woman who was a former chairperson of Mensa, an industrial designer, an accountant, a housewife, a bookkeeper, and a sociology student. A psychologist named Dr. Joel Witten also attended many of the group's sessions as an observer. The group's first task was to create their fictional historical character. Together, they wrote a short biography of the person they named Philip Aylesford. This is a kind of a part of the biography that I found. It's not the whole thing, but it's just kind of in short here. So Philip was an aristocratic Englishman living in the middle 1600s at the time of Oliver Cromwell. He had been a supporter of the king, and he was Catholic. He was married to a beautiful but cold and frigid wife named Dorothea, the daughter of a neighboring nobleman. One day, when out riding on the boundaries of his estates, Philip came across a gypsy encampment and saw there a beautiful dark-eyed woman with raven-haired, or a beautiful dark-eyed girl, raven-haired, and named Margot, and instantly fell in love with her. He brought her back secretly to live in the gatehouse near the stables of their manor and his home. For some time, he kept his love nest secret, but eventually Dorothea, realizing he was keeping someone else there, found Margot, accused her of witchcraft, and stealing her husband. Philip was too scared of losing his reputation and his possessions to protest the trial of Margot. She was convicted of witchcraft and burned at the stake. Philip was subsequently stricken with remorse that he had not tried to defend Margot, and and used to pace the battlements of the town of Diddington in despair. Finally, one morning, his body was found at the bottom of the battlements, whence he had cast himself off in a fit of remorse. So essentially, he just was so heartbroken that he didn't do anything that he ended his own life.
Well, he shouldn't have been such a pussy and let it play out that way.
Yeah.
Because, damn, that's a harsh punishment.
Yeah.
Being burned at the stake for... That wasn't even her fault.
No, no.
It's 100% his fault.
This brings up a lot of questions when we get to the end of the show. Remind me to come back to this, because this is entering some weird territory. Manifesting things that never happened to making them into real life, right? Okay. The Owens group even enlisted artistic talents of one of its members to sketch a portrait of Philip. With their creations, life and appearance now firmly established in their mind, the group began in the second phase of the experiment, which is contact. In September of 1972, the group began their seances that they called sittings, informal gatherings in which they would discuss Philip, his life, meditate on him, and try to visualize their, quote, collective hallucination in more detail. These settings, conducted in a fully lit room, went on for about a year with no results at all. Some members of the group occasionally claimed they felt the presence in the room, but there was no results that they can consider any kind of actual communication with Philip. There was nothing that they could actually, like, prove that the things they were feeling were him. So they decided to change their tactics a little bit. The group decided that they'd have better luck if they attempted to duplicate the atmosphere of a classic spiritualist seance, which, if you remember, spiritualists also took part in the lead mask case. Same stuff. They dimmed the room's lights, sat around a table, sang songs, surrounded themselves with pictures of the type of castle they imagined Philip would live in, as well as objects from that specific time period. This seemed to work. During one of the evening seances, the group received its first communication from Philip in the form of a distinct rap on the table. Soon Philip began answering questions asked by the group. One rap for yes, two for no. They knew it was Philip because, well, they asked him who he was. The sessions took off from there, producing a range of phenomena that could not be explained scientifically. Through the table rapping communication, the group was able to learn the finer details of Philip's life. He even seemed to exhibit a personality, conveying his likes, his dislikes, his strong views on various subjects, made plain by the enthusiasm or consistency of his knocks. His, quote, spirit was also able to move the table, sliding it from side to side despite the fact that the floor was covered in thick carpeting. At times, the table would lift up and even dance on one leg. So, this is weird, right? Whatever they are conjuring is essentially adding details to the life, the fictional life that they created. Details that they didn't create.
That's so weird. It's
fucking weird, right?
It's almost like fucking with an astral AI.
Kind of. It brings up so many questions as to, like, what is the morality of doing this? You know?
I guess, like, it depends on how you look at it. Because if you viewed it like I just stated, like an astral AI, it kind of leads back to the simulation theory or living in the Matrix, you know? And because I do strongly believe that we have the ability to manifest reality. But it can't just be you sitting here talking shit. You know what I mean? Like, yeah, it's got to be real.
Put the energy.
Yeah,
into it.
Yeah, and I think I don't think that shit can be faked. I think it's either real or it's not. Like, I genuinely think that, like, in regards to the show, if everybody, it's like whenever a new song comes out and it has a buzz to it, it's a banger, and everybody thinking it and liking it and listening to it. And I think that puts out an energy, a frequency, and it manipulates, it essentially makes the song more viral than it is.
Oh yeah.
You know what I mean?
Manifestation.
Like, yeah. It's a straight up manifestation. I think they could be done for anything, but I think it all has to be genuine. I don't think you can just fake the shit. I think it's gotta be real.
So specifically with this, do you think, like, obviously if he responds to things that they created and put out in paper, like, that could be subconsciously their own minds manifesting this. How do you think it adds details about his life that they didn't consider? Do you think that's also their own subconsciousness, or
it's, I don't know. That's more of a gray area.
It's fucking weird, right?
It is weird because, like, it could be their subconscious.
Yeah.
But it could also be that somehow you gave birth,
yes,
to, like, we'll just call it for now, like, the astral AI.
An energy.
Yeah. And
you created it.
But at the same time, it has to have its, like, it almost has to have its own consciousness. I don't want to say consciousness, but its own.
Almost, yes, though.
Yeah. It's a weird gray area. But because now it has parameters within that it can start to manifest.
It's as well. And clearly it's like gaining power.
Yeah. It's definitely bizarre.
Which is weird, but it's weird that I use that because the next little section here is limitations in his powers. So Philip essentially is a creation of the group's collective imagination, evident by his limitations. Although he could accurately answer questions about events and people of this time period, it did not appear to be information that the group was unaware of. In other words, Philip's responses were coming from their subconscious or their own minds. Some members thought that they had heard whispering in response to questions, but no voices could ever be captured on tape. So, essentially, maybe some of the finer details came from their subconscious, but how much could these people really know about, like, the 1600s? I know they're some of them are smart, but, like one of them was an accountant. Like, how privy are you to 1600 life?
Well, does it ever get overly specific with the details that they that
about
were given?
His life, no, yeah, not see, that I could find.
But see, what if the subconscious context that's being talked about is, well, I have a general idea of how someone lived within the 1600s. Therefore, you can kind of
play it out.
Yeah, you kind of like visualize,
like DM in it, you know, like.
Yeah. Yeah.
That makes sense too.
Yeah.
Philip's psychokinetic powers, however, were amazing and unexplained. If the group asked Philip to dim the lights, they would dim instantly. When asked to restore the lights, they would come back on. The table around which the group sat was almost the focal point of the peculiar phenomena. After feeling a cool breeze blow across the table, they'd ask Philip if he could cause it to start up and stop at will. He could, and he did. The group noticed that the table itself felt different to the touch whenever Philip was present, having a subtle static electricity or alive quality about it. Quote, alive is what they called it. On a few occasions, a fine mist would form over the center of the table. Most astonishing, the group reported that the table would sometimes be so animated that it would rush over to meet latecomers coming to the session, or even trap members in corners of the room. So,
did you just, like, give birth to a new creature at that point?
Like,
because I didn't hear you wrong, right? Like, the table is greeting people.
Yeah, would be excited to see the new people from the original eight coming in.
That's fucked.
It makes I don't know.
Because you can,
it's like it feels like Tulpa energy.
Yeah, well, and I mean, you could explain away some of the shit, right? You could explain away Ouija board answers. You can explain away some. You can't, I don't see how you're explaining away a table moving or the lights turning on and off.
No.
You know,
that's different. Unless the brain is capable of things that, like, I don't know, maybe we're not privy to.
Could be. I mean, there's still a lot that we have yet to learn, obviously.
Which is,
but it, I guess it would be like a mass hysteria, delusion, almost like a fucking, it's almost like a consciously induced acid trip at that point.
So weird.
Because it would be like a, arguably a form of psychosis.
It's so weird.
You're believing your own shit so much that it's manifesting, but it's all manifesting within all your minds because you're sharing a consciousness.
Yeah.
Outside of, you know, that's going down a different avenue of them actually, whether they're talking to something and it's just straight up manipulating all of them, or they've somehow created some type of fucking energy or tulpa or whatever it is.
It's so fucking weird, bro.
It's hard to wrap your brain around.
Because, like, once it's created, now I don't even feel like they know what they're doing.
No, there's no way they know what they're doing.
You know, I feel like they had a very precise experiment where they're like, we're going to create this ghost. If on the minute chance that this produces something, it's going to be within the parameters of the character that we built, right? Mm-hmm. It's going to be in these parameters, and now it's not. Now it's physically altering the time period and the world that we're in. And it's, you like, this can't even be attributed to a time slip because this thing never existed until they thought it into existence. And now it's here. Now it's present. Now it's physical. Now it's altering the objects in the room in this existence as nothing more than a collective thought.
It's fucked up.
It's
fucked up. Because you, I don't know, there's just so many avenues you can go down right now. Like, you could even argue, like, you go back to you talking in the beginning about the dude that was talking to somebody from the future. You could argue that, because you would think, naturally you would think to yourself, what would be the odds of these two people being in the same spot, ghost hunting, doing the same thing, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. However, if you put that on, you put that across a multiverse spectrum and a time is slush spectrum, well, then the odds are,
yeah,
they're 100% because inevitably, no matter what situation you create,
it's taking place there.
It's taking place somewhere constantly. In time.
Constantly,
yeah,
with just minute different things happening, because mm-hmm. everything that in that theory of time, everything that could is and has is taking place at the same time.
Well, not only that, but even like we've talked about before, because you would take that example too and lay it on top of like the universes are infinite, like. You've done every single thing within every single moment. You know what I mean? Like,
yep.
It just layers out. So if you layered the time on top of that, it's inevitable. It's happening.
And the crazy thing is that you bring that up. If that were the case, there is a universe where Philip existed.
Right.
Which is even more fucked.
Yeah.
My brain can't handle it.
I don't think anybody's brain can handle that.
No. But diving back in, the climax of the experience was a seance conducted before a live audience of 50 people. The session was also filmed as part of a television documentary. Fortunately, Philip was not stage shy, performed above expectations. Besides the table rappings and other noises from around the room, making the lights blink off and on, the group actually attained full levitation of the table. It rose only a half an inch above the floor, but this incredible feat was witnessed by the group and the film crew. Unfortunately, the dim lighting prevented the levitation from being captured on film. You can actually go on YouTube and watch the filmed Philip experiment.
That's crazy.
It's out there. So if you want to, definitely search that up again. It's older footage, but it's fucking weird. So although the Philip experiment gave the Owen group far more evidence than they ever even imagined, I feel like they thought none of this was going to come to fruition, which is crazy because they went a year without anything. And I don't know how often they show. Maybe they did it once a month. Maybe they did it like once a quarter. They only got together a few times. I don't know. But the fact that they kept pushing it until it did happen kind of leans more toward that manifestation. The only thing is they did not attain one of their original goals, which is to have Philip actually materialize. Which, what would happen if that were the case? If an apparition of this man showed up? You just created essentially an entity from nothing, which the aftershocks from that are crazy to think about.
Not really. I mean, look at Zeus, Ares, God.
It's weird, bro.
Because you could create, because in a grand scheme of life and reality, if manifestation is real, that means every thought could be real. And like you could give, you could be solely responsible for ghosts, for dog man, for aliens, for God, for Thor.
Bro, it's crazy.
Because that, like, and it falls into, like I said, it falls in that spectrum of like the Matrix simulation code of pure manifestation. Like it really does fall into those types of topics. It's super complex. It's making my brain really stretch its fucking limits right now.
It sucks.
But it's possible, right? It's possible. And when enough people put, however we do it, I don't even think we know, we realize what we're doing when we're doing it. But there's a difference, even in the way that humans talk with each other, there's a difference whenever I'm working for said clothing company and I'm trying to pitch you on this article of clothing. There's a clear difference between that and then me finding a jacket that I absolutely fucking love and I'm telling you about that jacket. There's two completely different things there.
Yeah.
Right? When somebody's passionate about something, you feel that energy of them selling that to you.
100%.
And if they're just doing a fucking job, you're like, cool, you know, like, great. You don't feel the same.
It's crazy, but it gets crazier, right? The Philip experiment was so successful that it was not a one-off. The Toronto organization decided to try it again with a completely different group of people and an entirely new fictional character. This time, after only 5 weeks, the new group established contact with their new ghost, Lilith, a French-Canadian spy. They continued to recreate these connections through other experiments, conjuring up more and more entities. One was named Sebastian, a medieval alchemist. One was named Axel. This person was from the future. All of them completely fictional, yet all produced unexplained communications through movements, raps, dimming of lights, and other like spectral connections. one that's even closer to our timeline, essentially, was in a different group, a group from Sydney, Australia in the early 2000s attempted a similar test called the Skippy Experiment. Six participants created the story of Skippy Cartman, a 16-year-old Australian girl. The group reports that Skippy communicated with them through raps and scratching sounds. Here I found an article of this said Skippy case. Recently, another group of eight Australians, under the guidance of paranormal researcher Michael Williams, tried to reproduce the phenomena that took place during the Philip experiments. They rigidly adhered to the guidelines set down by the previous experimenters, even creating their own imaginary ghost. Their fictional character was Skippy Cartman. She was a 16-year-old girl that lived near Dubbo, New South Wales, Australia. She attended Catholic school and developed a crush on her teacher, Brother Monk. The two carried on a secret love affair that might have lasted had it not been for an unexpected pregnancy. Obviously, she went to him when she found out that she was pregnant for direction and advice. When the holy man learned of her pregnancy, he strangled her and hid her body beneath the floorboards of a work shed on her parents' property. By the time the investigators found her body, the murderer had moved away to another parish and was not found. With their fictitious story ready to go, the group of investigators decided to move forward on creating their own ghost. The group met once a week for 5 months but found no results. Frustrated, they decided to change one variable, the table they were using. They began setting around a light three-legged card table. This seemed to do the trick. The first night, they heard a light tapping noise from somewhere inside the table. The second setting brought startling results as well. After 15 minutes, the table began to seemingly move on its own accord. Soon, it was spinning around, balanced on one leg, even dragging participants behind it. The group was led by, veteran paranormal researchers who reported a great deal of continued success with Skippy, including intelligent knocking and scratching sounds. As of late 2007, there were claims that the experimenters would soon capture audio or visual evidence of these manifestations and share them with the public. However, none of the evidence has ever came to light, so you're almost left to assume that they did not capture anything. But the fact that they keep recreating these experiments, like there's something to it, right? There has to be.
Well, definitely, like, puts a whole new twist on imaginary friends with children.
That's scary.
Yeah. And then no matter what, in these fictional experiments, in my opinion, there's no way to rule out subconscious.
No. No.
Because when they talk about, like, information that is unexpected, if it's true and you are kind of like live feeding into this energy, that opens the door for speculation. You know what I mean? Like we talked about in the beginning, like how would somebody know the 60? Well, you know enough about it
to
that you can kind of like
fill the gaps.
Yeah, fill these gaps.
Yeah.
So there's just no way. There's no way you can rule out speculation outside of them like absolutely side fucking you with some type of like mathematical equation that nobody knows anything about. And you're like, what the fuck is this? And then you take it somewhere, you know, and it leads to this bigger thing. What the fuck? Why does the material of the table matter?
I don't know.
What's that about?
I don't know, man.
That's what's got me fucked up.
They both had to change like certain variables to get things going, which is also weird. If it's just their subconscious producing this, like, why didn't the original setup work?
Yeah.
Which is, it's so bizarre.
I don't know.
Kind of, those were the two instances, but like I said, they recreated the experiment multiple times, not only the Owens group, but other paranormal groups. And while I didn't look into it, I just was sitting here thinking about it. When the Newkirks went on tour this past year with their ventriloquist dummies, their like tagline was "Help us create a ghost."
Yeah, I remember you showing that.
I wonder if they did something similar.
They probably did.
To this Philip experiment.
They probably did.
Because they have the following to have a mass manifestation, which is crazy. A couple more interesting little cases I found later on, not so much so in the realm of creating a ghost particularly, but other instances of what could possibly be considered as ghosts. So one I found was a man by the name of Terry Waite, who was held hostage in Beirut. He often, like, as his kind of safe place, he would imagine places back home that he felt attached to, right? Like going to the ice cream shop or going to church. During his time when he was in captivity, at least two people recall seeing a ghost-like figure of Terry walking around these same locations that he was imagining himself in while he was being held hostage. Also, we have a case of Alexandra David Neal. She journeyed through Tibet, and one of the many mystical techniques that she studied was that of tulpa manifestation. A tulpa, according to traditional Tibetan doctrines, is an entity created by the act of imagination, rather like the fictional characters of a novelist, except that tulpas are not written down. David Neal became so interested in the concept that she decided to try to create one. The method involved was essentially an intense concentration and visualization. David Neal's tulpa began its existence as a plump, benign little monk, similar to Friar Tuck. It was at first entirely subjective, but gradually with practice, she was able to visualize the tulpa out there, like an imaginary ghost fitting about the real world. In time, the vision grew in clarity and substance until it was indistinguishable from physical reality, a sort of self-induced hallucination. But the day came when the hallucination skipped from her conscious control. She discovered that the monk would appear from time to time when she had not willed it or thought about it. Furthermore, her friendly little figure was beginning to slim down and taking on a distinctly sinister aspect. Eventually, her companions, who were unaware of the mental disciplines that she was practicing, began to ask her about the stranger who had turned up in their camp, a clear indication that the creature was now well out of her realm of imagination and in objective reality. At this point, David Neal decided things had gone too far, and she applied a different lamaist techniques to reabsorb the creature into her own mind. The tulpa proved very unwilling to face its destruction in this way, so the process took on several weeks and left its creator very exhausted. That was just a couple more instances of things that could be considered ghosts that, like, I guess aren't ghosts, whatever ghosts are. Like, but back to the Philip experiments. If this is the case, does that lead an argument that ghosts as we know them don't exist? Are these things just product of our own minds? Like our unconscious is responsible for these things, but we're not aware of it.
As cliche as this sounds, I feel like yes and no.
That's 100% where I'm at.
Like I think I'm always going to think that the possibility of a fallen comrade being a ghost is that's a thing, but I also believe in the power to manipulate reality. Like the idea of manifesting, I think that's real. You know, I just think that I think it's hard for the human brain to wrap its head around, for the simple fact that we don't know how to control emotion as much as we like to think we do.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Because you and me can sit here all day long and be like, man, I need some money to pay off my bills. But it's not like
you can't manifest the dollars. Well, maybe
but
you can.
You could manifest the opportunity, but my point is, like, the energy has to be real, you know, because we can talk shit about needing money all day long, but we're like, it's not, I don't feel like that's genuine. I don't feel like that's real in regards to something else, like your child, being diagnosed with cancer, that needing of something is far different than the need of I need money to pay my bills. Like like there's a clear separation in emotion there and energy that's being put forth.
Yeah. It's like the coat thing, but to a different extent.
Yeah. It's and I think that, I don't know. It's really hard to explain. I can see the moving parts in my brain, but it's hard to get it out there into reality. It's bizarre to think, but at the same time, it's not that far-fetched that, like, creating an ethereal fictional character is a thing. The curious thing is that it
takes on a life of its own.
Yeah.
Which, okay. That being said, that's a good segue. I'm glad you say that. That being said, is there a specific moral obligation to the people creating these entities in the aspect that, like, say Skippy, for example, the history and the life they wrote of that girl was fucking tragic, right? She's a murder victim.
Well, look at Philip.
Yeah, same. Is there some moral obligation that if you were going to essentially put the energy into creating that entity, like, that's on you now? Once that manifests into something physical, like, that entity's history is hers, and you've created that for her. That includes, like, all the trauma that came with being murdered, and all the trauma that came with being manipulated by someone you trust. Yeah, it's fucked up, right?
Yeah, I agree.
That's a weird moral quandary there.
I don't think there's anything weird about it. I think you would venture into wrong.
Well, yeah.
Because no matter, like, it's also very interesting that you point that out, that those are the ones that worked better are the ones of traumatic background.
It almost makes me want to look into the other ones, like the spy and stuff, to see if that, if trauma is
the key,
is imperative.
Yeah.
Which I feel like
it still doesn't make any fucking sense. The fact I don't understand why it matters. You know what I mean? Because it's a fictional fucking character. It's not real.
Until it
is. So why does the significance of trauma, unless trauma in itself, the visualization of trauma in our own brains, triggers something different than a joyous moment in our brains? Because essentially, which could also be a fucked up scenario too, because we don't know how far down the rabbit hole this goes, but essentially, you're creating said thing right here with, like, it's taking energy from me and you and that person and that person and that person and that person, all to believe this backstory, all to help create this backstory. And then we're pouring our energy into said thing. You know, like, what if we have a finite amount of this energy that we can just dump out into the fucking universe?
It's
what if it's not, like, infinite?
Oh, that's crazy to think about too.
Because then it's like, or even if it is infinite, it doesn't matter, because essentially at the end of the day, like, the imaginary trauma that you think of is then translated into energy, which then leaves you to go into this entity that is now housing traumatic energy,
which is
even though it's fucking made up,
crazy.
I don't know, man. It's fucking weird.
It leads into a point that the original article made, which didn't, I don't think they meant for it to go this direction with the trauma and stuff. We hit that on our own, but the original article stated another point of view is that Philip was a completely fictional character, but that the Owens group really did contact the spirit world, and a playful or demonic entity took the opportunity of these seances to take on the form of Philip.
Yeah, I said that. I said similar earlier. I said it could be just full on manipulation.
Yeah, like,
which is also always, I mean, it is kind of like our thing now to kind of throw manipulation into the mixing pool, which I think is fair. I think it's a fair possibility to the entire situation. But it's also weird to kind of argue against that. It's fucking weird that in cases across the world, it involved a fucking table.
Yeah, that is weird. That
did like this balancing act on one leg type shit.
Which is very, you know what I mean? Very like old school seance-y.
Yeah.
I guess I should have looked into these other ones a little bit deeper. Maybe I will. Maybe just for my own peace of mind. Looking into the Lilith and looking into Sebastian, looking into Axel, especially Axel, the one from the future. See, just to see.
That would be an interesting, a little bit more interesting backstory on him.
Yeah, and that they all produce the same results is so fucking crazy.
It's weird.
But
unless there's some type of like lesser god or fucking entity that like that's kind of their MO. Oh, well, I guess it could be kind of like a trickster.
Yeah, or situation. Like somewhat demonic. Like that's what made me think of it. Like the trauma. Like those.
Yeah. Oh,
those
yeah.
Things want to feed off that, and essentially you're just giving them an open plate to do whatever they want with. You're like, hey, we're gonna create this entity that's based off of trauma. Here you go.
Yeah. Like what, dude? What if like. Like, I've just, like, in my head, I just got a visual of, like, imagine an ethereal fucking slug.
Just waiting for a body.
Yeah, and, like, you essentially have, like, you guys are putting so much thought into this backstory of trauma that it, like, now it's there ready to feed.
Yep,
and just create, I don't know, just creates this.
You've given it a history. You've given it a face. You've given it a body. You built a suit for this thing.
That's fucking gross.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's a hard one. Like there's a lot of avenues to run around and play with on this one.
Yeah. And I end it with like, again, it's one of those things where we're pretty much left with more questions than we got answers to. And it makes like, you know, it's probably a conglomeration of everything. Maybe ghosts and apparitions are not just like limited to the dead. Maybe it also includes, you know, remnants of the living. Maybe it also includes like our brains creating these things, which essentially could open up doors to spiritual things. I don't know, man. It's fucking weird.
It is weird.
But yeah, all we know is there's a lot of shit we just don't know, right?
Yeah.
That's a
given.
That's where we're going to end that on. I'm curious. Yeah, check it out. You can look up the original Philip experiment on YouTube. Go and watch that. Curious as to everyone's thoughts. Just kind of stumbled on this one actually last night. So hope everybody enjoyed it. And yeah, man, I don't know. Makes my brain hurt. Makes me feel dumb. And makes me realize there's so much stuff that we don't know. But again, happy Monday. Hope everybody had a good weekend. Thanks for kicking it with us. And check us out at all the normals. Till we meet again, stay safe, stay weird. And in the words of our old friend the Acacia Strain, the ghosts that haunt this earth are different than you think. We'll be right back.
If you love to travel, Capital One has a rewards credit card that's perfect for you. With the Capital One Venture X card, you earn unlimited double miles on everything you buy. Plus, you get premium benefits at a collection of luxury hotels when you book on Capital One Travel. And with Venture X, you get access to over 1,000 airport lounges worldwide. Open up a world of travel possibilities with the Capital One Venture X card. What's in your wallet?
Terms apply. Lounge access is subject to change. See CapitalOne.com for details.